Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay, now we get into a new part of the discussion. The whole claim, the thesis, is that the Absolute Truth is described, can be, and is described by the words of the Vedas. But we have to consider that the kind of description that it is not ordinary material description. Not in the ordinary material ways is it described. So, okay, let's see what Jiva Goswami says about this. Paragraph 32. Kimcha natasya prakrita vat sakshan nirdeshya tvam kintu anirdeshya tvenaiva tata nirdeshya tvam iti siddhantyate. And furthermore, we conclude, siddhantyate, he is not describable directly as material beings are, but rather is describable as being undescribable. Okay, what does that mean? We'll see. He's describable as being undescribable. Anirdesha tvena eva tata nirdesha tvam. That doesn't mean, as the Mayavadis would take it, that he's not describable. And that's all we can say about him. We can say a lot about him. But we can't say, just go and make empirical observations and be able to say anything. Not in the ordinary way of just collecting empirical evidence and making hypotheses, guesses. Maybe it's like this and maybe it's like that. You can't say anything true or meaningful about the Absolute Truth in that ordinary way. There's somehow that the Lord is described, but it's a transcendental process. Anyway, what he says here, it's in terms of his not being describable that he's described. We'll see if there's anything more in the commentary about that, but let's go ahead. Tataiva hi tasam mahavakyopa samharaha. Thus the whole presentation of the Shrutis is summarized. This is the end, I think, yeah, the last verse of the prayer of the personified Vedas. Dyu pataya evate nayayur antam anantataya tvamapi yadantaranda nichaya nanu savaruna. Koivavajang sivanti vayasa sahayat shrutayas twayihi palantyatan nirasanena bhavannidana. Because you are unlimited, neither the lords of heaven nor even you yourself can ever reach the end of your glories. That's how he's on New Day Shatwa. You can say so many things, but you can't say everything about him. The countless universes, each enveloped in its shell, are compelled by the wheel of time to wander within you, like particles of dust blowing about in the sky. The Shrutis, following their method of eliminating everything separate from the Supreme, become successful by revealing you as their final conclusion. Okay. Twayihi palanti. They bear their fruit in you. Atanirasanena. By negating everything other than you. Atra Swarupa Ganayur Dwayorapi Dwai Dive Anirdesha Twam. Here it is said that both the identity and the qualities of the Supreme, the identity, the Swarupa, and the Gunas, the qualities of the Supreme, are undescribable. And it's said how they're undescribable in two different ways. Anantena idam itam ittariti nirdesh asambhavena cha. The two ways in which he's undescribable, he and his qualities, because they are unlimited, his identity and qualities are unlimited, and because it is impossible to describe them by saying, it is like this. Yeah. Idam ittam. This is like that. You can't say just say that about the absolute truth. What does that mean? Let's see. I think it means you can't just observe him with your senses and mind and speculate about him. Okay, Tatra Pratamam. So the two different ways in which he can't be described. He's unlimited, so you can't say everything about him. And second, you can't describe him by ordinary, empiric and speculative ways. So, Pratamam Anantin Ahu. Thus first the Shruti state how he is undescribable in terms of his being unlimited. They say, Hey Bhagavan, Te Tava Antam Evatvam, Etavatvam, Dyupataya, Swargadi Loka Patayo, Brahmadayo Pi Nayayur, Navyaduhu. O Personality of Godhead, the Lords of Heaven, Brahma and the other Lords of the planets, Swarga and so on, do not reach your end. They do not reach means they do not understand, and your end means your extent. How much of you there is, they can't say. The Lords of Heaven can't say. Tatkutaha anantataya. The word is there because of being unlimited. You have no end, so they can never reach an end of describing you. Why is that? Because of your being unlimited. That's the first way in which he's undescribable. He explains more. Yad antavat vastu tat kimapi na bhavasiti. In other words, you are not any of the entities which have an end. Whatever has an end, you're not one of those things. Asatam te yasmat twamapyatmanontam nayasi. What to speak of them, the Lord of Heavens? Even you never reach your own end. You can never understand or say everything about yourself. Kutas tarhi sarvigyata sarva shakti twa shakita va. So, the Lord asks, but then how am I all-knowing and all-powerful? This is the answer. Tatrapyahu anantatayeti antabhavenaiva. I'm sorry. This they answer with the same word, anantataya, because of your being unlimited, because you have no end. Because you have no end, not even you can understand yourself. That doesn't mean that you're impotent or ignorant. There is no end. So there's no fault in not knowing something that doesn't exist. Nahi shasha vishan agyanam sarvagyam tada praptir va shakti vaibhavam hivyanti. Not knowing a rabbit's horn does not undo omniscience, nor does failing to obtain the rabbit's horn undo one's being potent. Rabbit horn doesn't exist. There's no fault in not understanding it or not being able to take it in your hand. Shrutischa yosya jakshak parame vyoman Songa Veda Yadivana Veda Iti. In this regard, there is the statement of Shruti. Indeed, the ruler of this world, living in the supreme sky, may know this, or maybe he doesn't. So, Supreme Lord doesn't know the end of his glories, but there is no end, so there's no fault in him not knowing it. He still knows everything. Here's a commentary. What do the Upanishads mean, then, when they say that the mind and words give up in their attempts to know and describe the Supreme? Ito vacho nivartante. It doesn't say that words don't say anything about the Supreme. It says they stop. So they say something, and then they can't say everything, and they finally give up. The Upanishads mean that although the Supreme's devotees can know and describe him in truth, not even they can know or describe everything about him. His essence and his qualities are unknowable in the sense of their being unlimited. Even the lords of heaven cannot comprehend him completely. They do not know the end of his glories because such an end does not exist. Certainly a person supposedly in full knowledge of everything does not lose his status because he can't know and describe the qualities of a non-existent rabbit's horn. Even God does not know any limit of himself. And then I think Rig Veda, 10th mandala, it says, the Rig Veda, ka aveda ka iha pravocha kuta ajata kuta ayam visrishtihi arva deva asya visarjane nata koveda yata abubuva iyam visrishtir yata abubuva yadiva dade yadivana yosya jakshat parame vyoman songa veda yadivana veda. Jiva Goswami quoted those last words. He may know or not know, but we didn't read the part, not know what. So here's the whole statement. In this world, who actually knows? And who can describe him from whom this creation was born? All the demigods are younger than his appearance in the creation. Who then knows him from whom the world came into being? Perhaps he who from this creation came into being created it intentionally, or maybe he didn't. Indeed, the ruler of this world living in the supreme sky may know his own creation, or he may not. Now, this is Rig Veda. So you can see the Vedas are not only Karmakanda. This is a very philosophical statement. dealing with the absolute truth. And this is right out of the Rig Veda. Okay, now, we have only discussed, there were two ways in which he's undescribable. The second way hasn't been discussed yet. That'll come up later. Okay, any questions? Yes.
I remember somewhere in the second canto, there is one statement also similar to this one. That even Supreme Lord himself, he doesn't know his own limit of his glories.
Yes, in the second canto.
Yeah. Previously it was understood in statement that Shishod Kunapi Samavasya Sinasya Param, that Lord Sheshanaga, he's been describing Supreme Lord's glories from the time immemorial, but he couldn't reach this end. And then a little bit later on there is one statement that Supreme Lord himself, he doesn't know it. And then Srila Prabhupada, I remember his writing commentary that the Supreme Lord's glory is not static, it's dynamic, so it's always expanding. So even if Krishna tries to understand it, like at one point of time, he has to extend himself more. And this is one of the part of his new glories. So then he has to again expand, and this is going on like...
Yes, yes. And that the second canto is directly concerned with the Vedas. The second canto is describing a lot of things from the Vedic perspective. The sixth chapter is a commentary on the Purusha Sukta, which is almost in the same place as these two verses I read in the 10th mandala, the Rig Veda. So that verse that you refer to is actually commenting on these verses from the Rig Veda that we're doing here. The Bhagavatam is commenting on them.
I was hearing one lecture from a devotee. He was speaking on Ishopanishad, the invocation, at Om Purnamada Purnamidam. So he was mentioning that because Krishna is complete, means to become a complete, he has to have incompleteness. So that something has to be complete, then it has to be some incompleteness. He also, like, otherwise how can it be complete? And then that devotee went on explaining that Krishna also gets a question that how beautiful I am, like this, and like these questions he gets, that how much love Radharani has for me. He doesn't know these questions, answer of these questions. So he went on telling that Krishna is incomplete, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is complete, that he knows everything.
Well, okay, it's pretty radical to say Krishna is incomplete. I'm not sure about that.
No, yeah, it means incomplete in the sense he doesn't know.
Well, Krishna has desires, but Krishna's desires, he can have his pastimes to make. He can have a pastime of making it complicated and difficult to fulfill his own desire. But actually, Krishna can get whatever he wants any way he wants. Such is sankalpa. So he's not really incomplete. He can pretend to be incomplete. Everything he wants to know, he knows right away. Anything he wants, unless he wants to make a pastime out of it, he can have whatever he wants immediately, including knowledge. Yeah.
These two ways are explained.
Well, yes.
One is
because he's unlimited.
Yeah. Second is...
Well, the second one we haven't really, it's just sort of cryptic and it hasn't been explained yet.
Okay.
Because he can't be explained, you can't just say he's like this.
That is what is the meaning of which word? Like?
Oh, I don't even know. Let's see. I don't know. Jiva Goswami has to tell us where that comes from. Mm-hmm. You see, he hasn't talked about it yet. That will come up in another paragraph.
Okay.
I hope.
Let's see. If it doesn't come up, then we can worry about it. But let me see. Let me see. It's 34. Let me see if it's here. Well, okay, I don't know.
This this definition is undescribable.
Anidesha?
Yeah, but we are comparing that to unlimited, because it's unlimited, you cannot describe.
Well, it's a reason. Being unlimited is a good reason for not being describable.
I mean, is it the difference between comprehensible and describable? Because
is there a difference between
comprehensible and...
Well, there are two different concepts. Something might be comprehensible but not describable. And something may be describable but not comprehensible.
Yeah.
I can, I can read a, some Latin poetry, but I don't know what it means.
Mm.
I can say it, but I don't know what it means. So something can be describable but not understandable.
Yeah.
So they're not exactly the same. Sometimes something is both undescribable and unknowable.
Yeah.
But they're two different ideas.
So here they are saying that because it's unlimited, it's not describable. But
yes.
I mean, why it has to be? It may not be describable fully, but it can be described.
Well, yeah. Well, then we're taking undescribable. We're interpreting it in a modified sense.
Mm.
Because if we took it too literally, that means you can't say anything about it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the Mayavadi stance, which they're not consistent about, because they're saying so many things. And what about the Upanishads saying so many things? So it's very difficult to hold the claim that it can't be described at all. We have to modify what anudeshatvam means. Undescribable has to mean something modified. Either the two ways to modify it are not describable completely,
yeah,
or not describable in ordinary words.
Yeah, yeah.
The two ways to explain it.
So, but I don't find this explained here.
Well, we're dealing here with the modification of not completely describable. That's how Jivakaswami is interpreting it here.
But we don't.
He's saying he's anudeshatva because everything about him can't be said.
It's mentioned. Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's being said right here. That because nobody, the lords of heaven, cannot say everything about him. Therefore, that means that he's undescribable.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the verse says. And Jiva Goswami is interpreting it to mean that he's undescribable in the way of being, because he's unlimited.
Mm-hmm. So that is implied understanding we have to get from this, because the particular word, the commentary also doesn't come. Somebody may ask whether he cannot be described at all, like that kind of question never came in the commentary also.
Let me see what you were saying. I'm sorry. I just didn't follow that.
I mean, this particular understanding that undescribable
means.
It's not that he cannot be described at all. That is not raised in the commentary.
Well, okay, that is not said. He jumps over that because he's dealt with that before.
Okay.
Earlier, in the Sundarbha, he's talked about that.
Okay.
But here he's just jumping to the explanation that the lords of heaven, even his own self, can't say everything about him. That is what that's what's being said here. That's all the verse says.
Okay.
And Jiva Goswami says this. Jiva Goswami reads it as being an explanation of how he's undescribable.
Okay.
So that's all the information he gives us. But from that, we can put together that he's taking undescribable to mean that you can't say everything about him.
Okay, okay. Thank you.
Yes?
Shortly about the Shri Yoga Swami, he will be explaining the second reason in Q and Nishkedas. He goes to state, maybe in 35 or 36, he goes to statement 1980. Mm. So he's going to this description.
Mm. Well, okay, I hope so. Because otherwise it's left dangling. Okay, when we get to 35, we'll probably see it. Okay. Yes,
Swami. He speaks of the Lord's glories being unlimited. He also does not know about it because it's so unlimited. But he is giving the example of a rabbit's horn and obtaining the rabbit's horn, which does not exist. Whereas his glories are unlimited, which exists.
But the limit doesn't exist. The end of them doesn't exist. So, anyway, you can argue that he knows his own glories, he knows all of them. But we're being told here that he doesn't. Because they're constantly increasing. That's one explanation Prabhupada gives. His glories are always increasing. Therefore, even if he knows everything, by the time he thinks about it, there's something new that he hasn't thought about yet.
Undescribable is in any way related to achintya in the terms?
Well, remember we have two different things.
Yeah.
The mind can't comprehend and words can't describe.
Yeah.
So a nirdeshatva is the words can't describe.
Okay.
Nirdesh means to point at something or to describe something. So this is specifically not being able to describe in words. Whereas achintya means you can't. Chint means to think.
Okay.
That means the mind can't understand.
Okay.
It's the other side.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Okay. Not that we figured everything out, but let's move on. He's undescribable because he's too complicated to understand. Okay. 33. Anantamevahu. Okay, so the Shrutis say how he is unlimited. Yad antareti, in the words beginning yad antara. Okay, nanu aho savarana utarotara dashaguna saptavarana yukta andanichaya vanti paribramanti. Indeed, just see, aho, the hordes of universal eggs with their coverings, conjoined each with the seven coverings, each further one, 10 times larger than the previous. They wander, those coverings, the universal eggs with the coverings, wander by the force of the ages. By the force of... I didn't read that Sanskrit. Vayasa kala chakrena ke rajamsi iva saha ekadaiva natu pariyayena. They wander by the force of the ages, the wheel of time, like particles of dust in the sky. And they do this together, simultaneously, not one after another. I got into a discussion with a pundit in Udupi, Madhva pundit, and he said that they don't believe that there's more than one universe. That the description of more than one universe indicates that there's one universe and then a different one and then a different one, but only one at a time. But here, Jiva Goswami is reading what the Vedas are saying here, the personified Vedas, as meaning saha, the word saha is there. The universes are wandering, all of them at the same time, not just one after another. So there are countless universes existing simultaneously. Translation of this, they wander by the force of the ages, the wheel of time. I took vayas to mean age. Hmm. Let me make a question about that. That may be a weird way to translate Vyas. Doesn't Vyas also mean... It doesn't mean anything else, does it? Could you look up Vyas in the dictionary? Age, anything else?
Any period of time,
okay.
Age,
okay. It doesn't mean the Milky Way or something, no. Just ages, time. Well, it can mean just time, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I said the force of the ages, but that's a strange phrase in English. It doesn't mean much. So that probably has to be changed. Anyway, the wheel of time. They wander like particles of dust. And they do this together, simultaneously, not one after another. Anena brahmandanam anantanam tatra brahmanat surupagatam anantyam tesham vichitra gunagananam ashrayatvat gunagatam cheti kyam. Well, if there's countless material universes wandering inside him, that leads to a conclusion. Thus his unlimitedness is to be understood both in terms of his identity, since unlimited universes wander within him, and in terms of his qualities, since he is the shelter of all the kinds of qualities contained in those universes. So if he's got universes, unlimited universes, each of them full of qualities inside him, then he must be unlimited and have unlimited qualities himself. You can't contain something unlimited unless he's unlimited. Shrutayascha. Okay, and there are such shrutis stating this. This idea is expressed by shrutis such as Yadurdvam Gargi Divo Yad Arva Prithivya Yadantaradhyav apritivi ime yad bhutam chabhavat chabhavishyat cha ityadhyā. The Shruti says, that, O Gargi, which is above the sky, which is below the earth, and which is between the sky and the earth, which is past, present, and future, that's the absolute truth. That's Brahman. That's, I'm almost sure, from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. And another statement from the Rig Veda. Vishnor nukam viryani pravocham yapartivani vimame rajamsi ityadyas cha. The second statement is, from the Rig Veda, he might try to describe fully the glories of Vishnu, who has counted all the particles of earth in the sky. And that statement is also echoed several times in the Bhagavatam, that same idea, but it's coming from the Rig Veda. Commentary. In the opinion of some Vaishnavas, no more than one material universe existed at one time. I'm not sure if it's the official Madhva policy. This pundit told me. So some Vaishnavas say so, at least. He said so. At least one Vaishnava said it. But this final prayer by the Shrutis gives scriptural evidence otherwise. As hinted at in Sri Brahma Sanghita and explained more elaborately in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, while Lord Mahavishnu rests in his sleep of yoga maya, countless egg-like universes emanate from the perspiration glands of his body. Thus the universe... Maybe he doesn't have glands. I don't know. Anyway, it's perspiration. Thus the universe we live in is just one of many. And as also indicated in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is the smallest of all of them. There is a narration in the third chapter of the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, of a great sacrifice performed by King Janaka Vaideha, in which he offered abundant charity to Brahmins. Many Brahmins came to accept these gifts, and the king became curious to find out whom among them had best realized the absolute truth. He brought forward a herd of opulently decorated cows and announced that the most realized Brahmin among the guests could take the cows. The only one who dared to respond was Yajnavalkya. When he told his brahmachari assistants to lead away the cows, the other Brahmins became... He just stood up and said, I know the absolute truth better than everybody. And he told his brahmacharis, okay, take the cows. The other Brahmins became angry, and several of them, one by one, tested him with philosophical questions. They didn't start beating him up physically, but they started challenging him philosophically. The lady scholar, Gargi Vachaknavi, presented a challenge of two questions. So these are Gargi's questions. Actually, Yajnavalkya had a wife named Gargi. I don't know if this is her. Maybe he married her afterwards, but I don't know. This may be another lady. Yes? Yeah, daughter of Maitreya, but that was his wife before, when he was taking sannyas. He had two wives. One of them was philosophically inclined, so he gave her instructions before he left. But this may be the same lady, but it's apparently before they knew each other. Maybe it's a different Gargi. Anyway, she challenged him with two questions. First question: Saho Vacha Yad Urdvam Yagyavalkya Divo Yad Arvak Pritivya Yadantara Dyav Apritivi Ime Yad Bhutam Chabavat Chabavishyat Chaitya Achakshate Kasmims Tarotam Chaprotam Chaiti. You see a mistake there? There's a kasmins. Instead of an anuswara, I have an N with a dot over it. Yeah, it should be an anuswara. Okay, I fixed it. She said, O Yajnavalkya, this is her puzzle, her challenge. O Yajnavalkya, whatever lies above the sky, below the earth, and in between the sky and on the earth, whatever is described as past, present, and future, what is that in which all that is woven, in which all of that is woven vertically and lengthwise? Everything in the sky, above the sky, below the earth, and in between, all of that is woven vertically and lengthwise in what? That's the question. Sahovacha, here's his answer. Yadurdvam Gargi Divo Yadarvak Pritivya Yadantara Dhyava Pritivi Ime Yadbhutam Chabhavat Chabhavishyat Chetya Chakshate Akashe Tarotam Chaprotam Cheti. He replied, O Gargi, whatever lies above the sky, below the earth, and in between the sky and the earth, whatever is described as past, present, and future, all that is woven on the sky, vertically and lengthwise. The answer is the sky is what is woven on. Problem here. I got these two words, diva and akasha, and I translated them both to sky. I think we have to be more technical about this. Well, yeah, diva is heaven, the heavenly region, the upper region of the universe. Akasha can be just taken like the whole ether that surrounds everything, not the sky in the normal sense, because heaven is above the sky in the normal sense, the atmosphere. So, we have to change this word here. Let's say the ether. Otherwise, we got the sky is above the sky. That doesn't make sense. Okay, so it's all woven on the ether, the akasha, vertically and lengthwise. See, akasha is in the Upanishads, sometimes it's said that the Brahman is akasha is Brahman. It's sort of a way of describing Brahman. It's, you know, the akasha is a material element, but sometimes Brahman gets the name akasha. So, Yajnavalkya answered that the sky. Oh. Okay. Second question, which I don't give the Sanskrit for. I don't know why. Maybe it was a long question. But second question, she wasn't satisfied with that. Okay, everything's on, you know, woven. Everything above and sky and below the earth in between is woven on the ether. But she then asks, in what is the ether woven lengthwise and sideways? Yajnavalkya answered that the ether is woven in the infallible, akshara, the absolute truth, in which reside all things and all their qualities. So he gets the cows. She had to admit that that's a good answer. Then, Vamadeva, where? In the Rig Veda, I think. Well, no. Yeah, Rig Veda. The sage Vamadeva realized, similarly, the unbounded scope of the personality of the Supreme. In the Rig Veda, he said, Vishnur nukam viryani pravocham yakpartivani vimame rajamsi yaskabhaya uttaram sadastam vichakramanas tvedorugaya. He who has counted all the particles of earth in the sky might try to describe fully the glories of Vishnu. He who made huge steps and reached beyond the world in which all creatures reside. This seminal verse of the Rig Veda, with its image of counting the atoms or particles of dust on the earth, is alluded to repeatedly in many texts, including Srimad Bhagavatam. For example, Lord Brahma tells Narada, in the second canto, 7th chapter, Vishnur nuvirya gananam katamohatiha yakpartivanya pikavir vimame rajamsi chaskambayak sarahasas galatat vipishtam yasmat visamya sadanat urukampayanam. Who can describe completely the prowess of Vishnu? Even the scientist who might have counted the particles of the atoms of the universe cannot do so, because it is he only who in his form of Trivikrama moved his leg effortlessly beyond the topmost planet, Satyaloka, up to the neutral state of the three modes of material nature, and all were moved. And then Shukadev says, in the 8th canto, similarly, Param Mahimna Uruvikramato Grinano Yakpartivani Vimame Sarajamsi Martya Pimjayamana Utajata Upaiti Martya Ityaha Mantradvik Vishik Purushasya Yasya. One who is subject to death cannot measure the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Trivikrama, Lord Vishnu, any more than he can count the number of atoms on the entire planet Earth. No one, whether born already or destined to take birth, is able to do this. This has been sung by the great sage Vasishta. That is Bhagavatam, 8th canto, 23rd chapter. And Krishna tells Muchakunda in the 10th canto, 51st chapter, Kvachid rajamsi vimame partavani urujamabihi guna karma bidanani name janmani karhichit. After many lifetimes, someone may count, might count, the dust particles on the earth, but no one can ever finish counting my qualities, activities, names, and births. And then the sage Drumila tells Nimi Maharaj in the 11th canto, 4th chapter, Yava anantasya gunan anantan anukramishyan satu bala buddhihi rajamsi bhumer ganayet katamchit kalena naivakila shakti damna. Anyone trying to enumerate or describe fully the unlimited qualities of the unlimited Supreme Lord has the intelligence of a foolish child. Even if a great genius somehow or other, after a time-consuming endeavor, could count all the particles of dust on the surface of the earth, such a genius could never count the attractive qualities of the personality of Godhead, who is the reservoir of all potencies. Okay, we have 2 minutes. One question, yes?
I have a question about the unlimited universes being inside the body of Mahavishnu. We know that this practice is outside, and then like we described this creation, that only empty shells are coming from the pores of Mahavishnu, and then they combine this practice and somehow it's... So how to understand this?
Well, it's not it's not in the form of Narayan, in his ordinary personal form, that he's got all these universes in his abdomen. But everything is his body. In a more metaphysical way, everything makes up the body of God. So everything that exists is inside the Supreme. It's not inside his pastime body. Although there is the pastime of Mother Yashoda seeing everything inside Krishna. But it's inside him in that abstract sense that he contains everything. Okay.
I'm asking this question because you mentioned in the purport that especially this form of Mahavishnu and the universe is coming outside. So maybe it should be clarified.
Okay, where do I say that?
In the commentary.
Well, because Mahavishnu, a countless universe come out of him while he's sleeping. That's what I said. That's true. But they come out of him. They're not... Well, if they're coming out of him, they must have been inside him. Of course, those are empty shells. It's not the substance, the contents of the universe is not in those shells. They're empty. But those empty shells were in him. Anyway, I just say that. It's true. One question.
We described this unlimitedness in terms of his qualities, and why did we discussing about the material, is unlimited?
Because the logic is saying, if the material universes are unlimited and they're inside him, then he must be more unlimited. So, it makes sense mathematically. If an infinite something is contained inside a bigger thing, that other thing must be more infinite.
So the Lord doesn't know the material creation also? That's what the verse says, the previous translation. The previous translation, last line, says that only.
He doesn't know his own glories.
Indeed, the ruler of this world living in the supreme sky may not know.
Okay.
Yeah. that O Gargi, which above the sky, which is below the sky, which is in between the sky and earth, which is past, present and future.
But that statement is not talking about the Supreme Lord not understanding. That was from before.
No, his unlimitedness is to be understood both in terms of his identity, since unlimited universe.
His qualities. But hi Krishna. We may have to deal with this tomorrow. It's going to take.
Okay.
A
yeah.
More
yeah.
Than a few
thank
seconds.
You. Thank.
This is a complicated question.
Yeah.
Remind me before we start tomorrow. That the question hasn't been answered.
Thank you.
We're going to have to discuss it for a while to get it right.
Okay.
I will stop. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Hare Krishna. I'm going to close this. Thank you.